This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Mozambique is a priority partner country under our strategy to prevent conflict and promote stability. So the United States supports Mozambique that is more prosperous, more secure, more resilient, and more democratic for all.
That's Anne Watkowiski, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Conflict and Stabilization Operations, on the U.S. contributing another $22 million to help Mozambique fight the extremist insurgency in the Cabo Delgado region. Details coming up. Also, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni appoints his son to be head of the military. And millions of voters in Senegal yesterday cast their ballots. We'll have these stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, just hours after Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni made minor changes to his cabinet, he also appointed his son, Muzi Ken Rogaba, to be head of the military. Analysts say the appointment puts Museveni's son in line to be president, but only in case Museveni, in power for nearly four decades, is unable to continue. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala, Uganda.
Museveni's son, generally referred to as Muhoozi, was named Chief of Defense Forces Thursday night, replacing General Wilson Mbusambadi, who was appointed a junior Minister of Trade. The 49-year-old Muhoozi has been away from active military command for 2 years. He was removed from his previous job as head of land forces for his controversial posts on Twitter, now known as X. In various tweets, he had threatened to invade and capture Nairobi within 2 weeks, voiced support for Tigray rebels fighting the Ethiopian government, and expressed approval of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. According to the Ugandan constitution, a serving military officer is not allowed to be involved in political activities. But Muhoozi ignored that, not only voicing his opinions, but also making his political ambitions public. Most recently, Muhoozi formed the Patriotic League of Uganda. The group is considered a civic organization rather than a political party to possibly sidestep any constitutional issues. Museveni has been grooming his son for the presidency for years. Although Godbatu Mshabe, director of the Great Lakes Institute for Strategic Studies, does not think a transfer of power is imminent.
He no longer has the opportunity to go and make a joke of himself doing things that are illegal. But also one has to realize that Museveni is a life president. I don't think that Museveni can allow his son to be president when he's alive. That will only happen when God has called him, or when he has become so incapacitated to be president.
Sarah Birete, executive director for the non-profit Center for Constitutional Governance, says Museveni had been tasked by the Central Executive Committee of the ruling NRM party to sort out the issue of Muhoozi's political future before the 2026 elections. Thursday's move indicates that Museveni, at age 81, plans to run for another term as president. Birete says it also indicates that the army led by Muhoozi will be on his side.
Being known to abuse human rights during elections, we have the unresolved Kampala extrajudicial killings where the army was involved. So we expect that now, with the technical head of the army in the name of the CDF, who has a clear political ambition, who has a clear partisan leaning of either the father or himself, we expect to use the army more visibly.
Museveni has been in power since 1986 and has often used security forces to suppress political opposition. Analysts say that assuming Museveni wins another term, 2 years from now, the army's conduct will be under intense scrutiny as observers watch for signs of a transfer of power. Halima Othmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
U.S. officials have pledged $22 million in new funding to help Mozambique fight Islamist militants in the country's troubled oil-rich Cabo Delgado, where an insurgency has intensified in the recent weeks. The U.S. already had pledged $100 million. Charles Manguero reports from Maputo.
At the end of a five-day working visit, Anne Witkowski, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Conflict and Destabilization Operations, said this funding aims to help Mozambique with stabilizing and peace-building efforts in its northern provinces. In an exclusive interview with VOA in Maputo late Thursday, Witkowski said the U.S.-funded programs provide training for local government officials to deliver services, promoting social cohesion through peace clubs, sports and the arts, along with increasing educational and employment opportunities for the youth. Calling security in North Mozambique critical, the American diplomat said it is important to see progress and the fostering of meaningful political and economic opportunities, especially for young people, for conflict-prone communities.
Mozambique is a priority partner country under our strategy to prevent conflict and promote stability. So the United States supports Mozambique that is more prosperous, more secure, more resilient, and more democratic for all.
Since 2017, Mozambique's northern province of Cabo Delgado has been facing an armed insurgency with some attacks claimed by an extremist group calling themselves Islamic State. On Monday, Mozambican President Filipe Nyusi warned that terrorism could divide the country, advocating that everyone unite to fight rebel groups in the province. Nyusi made the call after missionaries, priests and religious sisters were forced to flee from remote towns and villages to Pemba and other large cities, which are overwhelmed with persons displaced by the conflict. For the Mozambican head of state, a resolution of the problem depends on the unity of Mozambicans and foreign forces supporting them in the fight against armed groups in Cabo Delgado.
O terrorismo é a única coisa que pelo menos não é a única coisa, é uma das coisas.
Terrorism is the only thing that the whole world comes together to combat. If the world comes together, the region joins to combat the terror. The continent comes together to combat the terror. How is it that the country itself that experiences the problem of terrorism is not united? We have to be united and not go looking for arguments. I see people saying that the poverty is in Palma or Mocimboa da Praia. What about the other parts of Mozambique which are affected by poverty? Reverend Marcus Makamo, a scholar of African theology and religious sciences, has engaged with a coalition of religious and civic advocacy groups that are urging the government to open negotiations with the militants. He said the government should explore every available avenue to achieve lasting peace, including negotiations with terrorists. But he notes even diplomacy has its own challenges.
First, knowing the head of terrorists, where it is. Secondly, knowing inside the country, amongst ourselves, who are those who are supposed, who are seen as those who seem to support these outsiders. Because the outsiders would not have power unless people, local people, would just give them some information. Enemy would open the doors slightly so that they can enter, would provide information to them. If there are those who are a bit frustrated in the country, if they are not talking, expressing their frustrations before their fellow countrymen, we are running the risk of giving the land to outsiders.
The insurgency in northern Mozambique began in 2017, but has seen an increase in attacks since the beginning of this year. In the last few days alone, there have been several new raids in towns and villages, and people have been killed or kidnapped. According to humanitarian agencies, the insurgency in Mozambique has already caused at least 5,000 deaths, leading to the displacement of more than 1 million people. Oil giants ExxonMobil and Total are among the big international energy companies developing natural gas projects offshore northern Mozambique. Charles Mangwiro, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Millions of voters in Senegal cast their ballots for presidency yesterday. Already we have a winner. Mariama Diallo, Africa Regional Correspondent, Nairobi Bureau Chief, is in Dakar to sort out the latest. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mariama.
Thank you so much, Yahya, for having me.
So, did the vanquished former Prime Minister Amadou Ba actually congratulate Bassirou Diomaye Faye, who ran in place of disqualified opposition figure Ousmane Sonko? It's a very rare occurrence in African politics.
It's absolutely amazing. We waited. We were told to come in at noon. He was going to have a presser. It's after 4 o'clock, so just about 5 minutes ago. He addressed a sea of media and journalists. His supporters were right behind him. His supporters were interrupting, actually, and telling him how much they love him. But he did congratulate Jamai, Basiru Jamai Jahar Fai, the leader of the opposition coalition. He wished him well. He wished him a lot of energy and just, you know, as he becomes, you know, when we get all the official results, as he becomes the next leader of Senegal, the fifth president of Senegal, given that we've had, Senegal has seen Leopold Sédar Senghor, seen Abdou Diouf, Abdoulaye Wad, Macky Sall, and now it's going to be, it looks like it's going to be Basiru Jamai Jahar Fay.
The result came in very quick, Mariama. Most were expecting a runoff.
Yes, and I think when I actually filed my piece yesterday, when the polls closed, people did talk about it. Analysts said, gave all the scenarios, basically, what would happen in order to win straight from, you know, the round, you have to have majority, at least 51%. So if that doesn't happen, usually it goes to a runoff. And yes, it is very surprising because Amadou Ba is the former prime minister. He's held other high level jobs in the administration and also just in the, you know, working as a, you know, as a tax inspector as well, just like Jamai, we know, has been that. You know, it is a little bit surprising. But at the same time, we've also seen the recent crisis that happened when Macky Sall decided that he was going to postpone the elections. And people are saying that maybe that has affected their candidate because it was a shock for the country. It's never happened in Senegal. Senegal is seen in the region, this region that is plagued by coups, as a very democratic country. So when they decided to try to postpone the elections and obviously failed in doing that, that affected their party, that affected their coalition. And but I'm sure it is very surprising that, that you know, the next day, basically after the elections, you know, there is a winner. And, you know, and he's not the only one who has congratulated Mr. Fay. Other people who were in the running, as you know, there were 19 candidates, have already done so and tried to kind of congratulate Fay in his victory.
Senegal proving again that it is a beacon of democracy in coup-hit West Africa. So lastly, Mariama, this victory by Fay could herald a systemic overhaul in Senegal. You know, the anti-establishment figure has pledged to restore national sovereignty, fight corruption, distribute wealth more equitably. So what is the mood there?
Well, I think we're going to find out in a few minutes. I mean, yesterday some people were already celebrating in his camp, in Basiru Jamai Fay's camp already, because when the results were trickling in, they could already see the direction towards where the final results were going to go. But now that you know, the you know, Amadou Ba has conceded, people are probably going to celebrate a little bit more, I'm assuming, in the next hour or two. And maybe the Jamai Fay camp is also going to make a speech or, you know, talk to their supporters finally. But yeah, I mean, during the short campaign period, let's not forget that Jamai and Sonko had just been released from prison. So they really had a very short time to campaign. And, you know, and I think you can see Jamai with the broom. He actually reminded me of Buhari. I don't know if you remember from the Nigerian,
yes,
the former Nigerian president who had a broom and he was ready to rid the country of corruption and some of these other ailments. And I think that's one of the things that they've talked about. He's new. And guess what? He's actually 44. Today was his birthday. That's another one that I want to just throw out there. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the country is going to get to know him. Sonko is very well known, the person who actually endorsed him because he couldn't run. But we'll see what he can do for the country. We'll see what, you know, all those things they talk about during a campaign, it's easy to talk about them. But when you're on the hot seat, how do you actually make those goals, visions, basically kind of happen, materialize. So,
okay, Mariama Diallo, Africa Regional Correspondent, Nairobi Bureau Chief, thank you for your input.
Thank you very much for having me.
Senegalese were happy with how smooth the elections went and hope it further entrenches their reputation for following democratic principles. Omar Diop, speaking in French, marveled at the process.
And that would be a new dawn for Senegalese democracy to go through its third consecutive peaceful transition in power. It would be a landmark as an indicator of maturity of the Senegalese democratic system, would be the foundation for lasting peace and stability, and probably also the hope that all that with the work of the people that would lead to transparency and also good governance and prosperity for the majority.
Senegalese were happy, and Omar Diop, speaking in French, marveled at the process.
Salut à tout le monde. Effectivement, comme vous le voyez, je viens juste voilà, d'accomplir voilà, mon devoir de citoyen, voilà, qui est de voter.
How is everyone here? As we all see, I have completed my duty as a citizen by voting for the first time. You can see the crowd is huge, meaning the citizens have come out in great numbers to choose who is going to be their fifth president. Baba Kurnadia, principal researcher at Timbuktu Institute, said the vote raised hopes to continue building on the success of the election process.
My name is Jerome. I've already voted at Moussa Diallo voting station, one of the biggest centers in Rivesco, Dakar. When I came here early this morning, I found long queues of voters in front of the 11 polling stations. But it didn't take me long to cast my vote. People are very calm here. And the voting process started at 8 a.m. is going very well.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The United Nations Security Council today demanded an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Palestinian militant group Hamas and the immediate and unconditional release of all hostages. The United States abstained from the vote, and the remaining 14 council members voted for the resolution, which was proposed by the 10 elected members of the body. Israel Army Radio reported shortly before the meeting that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would cancel a planned delegation to Washington if the U.S. did not veto the resolution. Washington had been averse to the word ceasefire earlier in the nearly six-month-old war in the Gaza Strip and had used its veto power to shield U.S. ally Israel as it retaliated against Hamas for an October 7th attack that Israel says killed 1,200 people. But amid growing global pressure for a truce in the war that has killed more than 32,000 Palestinians, the U.S. abstained from today's vote to allow the Security Council to demand an immediate ceasefire for the month of Muslim fasting month of Ramadan, which ends in 2 weeks. Mine workers in the DRC are on the highest risk population groups for developing active tuberculosis due to their exposure to harmful airborne particles while digging for precious metals. The World Health Organization says miners in sub-Saharan Africa, especially in the DRC, have greater incidence of TB than do any other working population in the world. It's reported at 3,000 to 7,000 per 100,000 miners per year in some areas. For World TB Day yesterday, which is aimed at building awareness about the disease, Rachel Ngum, protected lead for Humana People to People Congo, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the high incidence in the mining sector is an invisible crisis that has eroded economic development in the DRC and neighboring countries.
In DRC, in Lubumbashi, we are working with three provinces. This is Okatanga, Lualaba, and Olomani, which are provinces with a high prevalence of TB. And our organization has funding from USA on their TB loan program. And also, we are doing active case finding of TB patients.
Why is there a high incidence of TB in the mining sector there?
The high prevalence is mainly because of the bad living condition in the mining areas. There's a lot of poverty and promiscuity because, you know, TB is an airborne disease, and most of the time people come around the mining areas because they need to find a way of living, and they live in very poor conditions. And most of the time there is no a very good health system there to follow them. And when they get infected, it's very easy for them to spread the disease around. So what we do is to go and sensitize and educate them on TB. And we go to find out and fish out those that are, we screen the population and we fish out those that are presumptive cases that will refer to the health facility for screening. And they have been put on treatment since the treatment is free. Then we follow them up in the community. And for us to ensure that these people are there to treatment, we create what we call trios around them. And these are members of their families or friends around them so that they can support them to adhere to the treatment, because it's a long treatment and sometimes people along the treatment, they get tired.
It also affects family members of the mine workers. Is that because it's just all over the place, you know, in the air?
Yeah, it affects the family members, because most of the time the people they live essentially on this walking around the mines. And when one member of the family is already sick, it means that maybe it's the person bringing income to the family. It means all the family is affected. And sometimes because of that, whatever can happen, children are not going to school, they cannot provide for what they are living, and the condition becomes even worse. And also in these areas, we have found some families that have been broken apart because of stigma and misconception around the TB. Because sometimes some are sick, people come to the hospital, then they don't diagnose it immediately, and they take them to the traditional healer, and there are all these misconceptions about the TB.
I know that, you know, TB is a curable disease, but are you achieving success in your efforts to lower the rate of TB in that area in the DRC?
Yeah, we would like to say so far our project, what we are doing, we're supposed to, it's a 5-year project, and we're supposed to, we have in 3 years, we have already reached above the target for 5 years. But still, we are still finding a lot of TB cases. It means there is much more than what we thought to be in this area, because if in 3 years we have achieved the goals of 5 years and we are still finding many people with TB, it means the TB is very high in this community.
That was a Humana People to People Congo project lead Rachel Ngum. She was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam from Lubumbashi, DRC.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Sweeb in Washington. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Bill Androdi, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.